Welcome back to episode 17 of the Student Physio Podcast. This week it's me, Connor Wright, and Brad Carrigan hosting. Today we have the pleasure of welcoming two very special guests to the podcast. And it goes without saying that anyone who has attended the University of Bradford in recent years will know of and hold tremendous respect for them. So Claire and Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Morning.
Morning. Yeah. Thanks, guys. We appreciate you having us on. And also congratulations on your recent accolades from a CSP point of view and working with physios in sport. That must be exciting stuff.
Thank you very much, guys. So yeah, welcome to the podcast. And just before we get started, we wanted to say that we're really excited at the prospect of maintaining a working relationship via the society and the podcast through the new business venture, Neonic. And we hope this will benefit students at Bradford and listeners from further afield.
Yep, and we appreciate that working relationship that we've got, and we're really, really keen to continue working with you guys and hopefully subsequent versions of the society. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Obviously, myself and Brad know a little about your background, but for the purposes of the listeners, could you just go into some detail about your journey today? So if we start with you, Claire.
Sure. So I've always been interested in sport and probably thought that kind of sport was going to be where I ended up. So I kind of did sports coaching and I was a swimmer when I was younger. Went straight out of uni kind of into sport really, and musculoskeletal practice and private practice, football and rugby mainly, and then also working with winter sport athletes and private practice, which I enjoyed. I really enjoyed. And then kind of got into lecturing through having students on placement. So I built a relationship with the university, having students on placement with me, did some guest lecturing as part of that, enjoyed that and liked the challenge, liked something new. And a maternity post came up down south. And I thought, oh, for a short time, let's go see what it's all about, have a crack, and really enjoyed it. Stayed there 4 or 5 years and then came back kind of up north for a different lecturing job. And then moved kind of out to where we are now. So it's whistle stop tour, but that's probably a summary of where we're at.
Interesting. And yourself, Michael?
Yeah, perhaps a little bit more convoluted. So I was again quite sporty, rugby and cycling at school, but I was involved in quite a bad rugby accident. So I saw physio from that side, but was a little bit too close to home at the time. So I went to do a general biology degree up in Newcastle. Thought about physio, applied that year, got quite a bit of work experience, but didn't get in. So the competitive nature of physio was pretty much the same back then. So then I did a master's because I was offered it and got more work experience, and then came to do physio from there at Bradford. So I'm a physio graduate at Bradford, and then went out into practice, similar to Claire, had students on placement, did a little bit of quite a lot of in-service training and short courses, and initially came into lecturing with the intention of being a lecturer practitioner. So obviously maintain some of those skills, but that's where we, yeah, that's kind of my journey in terms of into physio.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You've got a similar pathway, but obviously every pathway is very different. Did you always know that you wanted to go into lecturing from the start?
I wouldn't say so. I loved sports and I enjoyed coaching. So coaching, teaching, that kind of thing was definitely in me, but it's not something that I set out aspiring to do. I think the profession is so broad and so wide that we probably have some really fixed ideas about what we want to do when we come into it. And actually, there's probably not many people who follow that really fixed, rigid path that they think they're going to, because there's so many different opportunities. So no, if I'm honest, it wasn't where I saw myself, but yeah, I've rolled with the punches and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely not 100%. I saw myself working in sport. So went into the NHS from a musculoskeletal perspective, did quite a lot of sport, but actually didn't enjoy the pitch side like I thought I was going to, possibly linked to the accident that I was involved in. So when you're counting every single player up out of a ruck and a mall, it's a very long afternoon. So I actually moved away from sport and much more to that kind of NHS musculoskeletal side. And through that and delivering in-service trainings, thought more from a teaching perspective. But yeah, it wasn't on the agenda at all when I kind of left. I knew I wanted to do musculoskeletal and was quite strategic about that. But yeah, definitely not planned, my career plan. Right up until this point, there's definitely been a series of kind of accidents and coincidences, opportunities that have kind of brought me here.
Yeah, it sounds like a very go of the flow, and it's obviously worked out very well. I think it's always the best when that happens. So Michael, how did you find doing a different degree before physio, and how do you think it almost translates into your physio career?
So I actually found it really helpful. So a pretty full-on degree physio. So I was in a really big city, so I got the kind of student life bit out of me in terms of those early years. Made quite a lot of mistakes in and around a degree that perhaps mattered less on reflection in terms of from there. But I learned how to study, and I learned how I was effective. I learned when I was effective. I learned when I needed a break. So actually coming and doing a full-on degree such as physio, not feeling the peer pressure, perhaps in terms of going out at times and some of those kind of social aspects, plus knowing how I worked best, I was much more efficient in my physio degree. And I think that helped me considerably. As well as your academic skills, I suppose, in terms of presentations and assignment writing. So yeah, definitely felt that the content didn't particularly, there were little bits, but definitely prepared me in terms of study. And yeah, just been that little bit older probably benefited me in terms of coming in. If I'd have made similar mistakes that I made in my first degree in terms of trying to find that work-life balance, I might have struggled on my physio program from 18.
Yeah, and then I know that both of you do some form of external examining for other universities, but I just wondered, Claire, is this something that is commonplace for all lecturers to do across the board, across the country for physio?
Yeah, I wouldn't say all, but definitely it's common. It's a really good opportunity personally to see what other people are doing, learn from other people, share good practice, kind of engage in conversations with other universities and kind of bring things together a little bit. But from a process point of view, it's really important. So programs can become really insular, and you want to make sure that you're maintaining standards across the profession and across the different universities, I guess. So it's different, whereas at A level and things you have exam boards, and you know that exam board is across multiple kind of education institutions, etc. Whereas for universities, they're very much kind of their own in terms of their own assessments, they develop their own assessments, etc. So it's really important to make sure that standards are maintained across the institution. So it's important from a standards and a process point of view, but I think it can be a much richer role, and engaging in kind of how to develop and progress programs and use it to develop and progress your own kind of working is a really nice role to have. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's, and you can bring the experience back into your own programs and your own roles. There's a really good solid physio network of educators try to solve the same issues in terms of strategies, placements. It's really nice to have a sense check and kind of, you know, get out of your bubble.
Yeah, I think it always comes back to physios being really good at networking and always having, everyone says that physios always know physios, and they literally do. Everybody knows everybody in this profession, knows where we're slowly working out, especially through doing this. So I suppose, yeah, it's the same for lecturers. You're all got the same problems. You're all going to discuss the same things. But
we don't all have the same solutions. I think that's probably fair to say. So it probably broadens our networks a little bit, because some places don't necessarily go the full physio route. So, for example, they might have anatomy specialists, they might have physiologists. So it also allows us to kind of sell ourselves from a profession perspective in terms of looking at really innovative ways of doing things and contributing.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So we're going to move on. Kind of how you started at the start with talking about teaching and queuing, Claire. So teaching is a huge part of physiotherapy, and patient education is arguably one of the biggest aspects of physiotherapy. How did it initially feel moving from an environment where you were teaching patients to an environment where you were teaching the future of the profession?
Yeah, I think there are probably key teaching things that are common across both. So I think teaching is a skill, and the things that make you good at teaching probably make you good at teaching students versus teaching patients. I think the big difference is probably teaching to the number of people that you teach to. And when you're teaching a patient, you're trying to be patient-centered, you're trying to put stuff across in a way that motivates them in a way that they will understand, in a way that appeals to things that are kind of going to motivate them to comply with what you're doing and understand why you're asking them to do that. Which is sort of easier than having a room full of people that you're trying to make what you're saying accessible to multiple people at the same time, who have really different learning styles, really different needs, and making sure that what you're saying has a broad appeal rather than that kind of really focused teaching with one person. So I think there's the how you put it across and thinking about making it accessible across a wider group of people, but I think there's also thinking about how the level of understanding they need, I guess. So how you put something across, the patients probably need to understand to comply. So to make them think about doing what you're asking them to do, they have to understand what you're asking them to do and why you're asking them to do it. Whereas physio students need to understand it to apply it, and to understand to apply to different situations is probably a deeper understanding, and thinking about how to get that across. And probably learning myself in terms of learning alongside students sometimes if they're challenging what you're asking, but also thinking about how to put something across with deeper understanding so it can then be applied to different situations. I think they're probably the biggest differences that I notice.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I think it's a natural progression to a certain extent, because I think we do teach, and I think we've had this conversation before in terms of that we are inherently teachers if we're doing our role. But yeah, very different in a classroom of mixed ability students with mixed experience and feeling a strong sense of responsibility for their learning. And I think it takes a little bit sometimes to admit that you don't know something in front of a group of students and patients, but you can possibly get by a little bit more with your patients in terms of offering your opinion around what we want to do as physios a little bit. But yeah, definitely challenging. I had to swap up massively having coming out of practice to teach and to assess undergrad students. So yeah, it felt like a natural progression, but quite a big step.
Yeah, I think so. Tom, one of the other University of Radford lecturers, said in the recent podcast around the change coming into lecturing, obviously he's just done it quite recently, specifically around the better understanding that he had to have just to teach things that he thought he knew already, that to patients almost you can blag it away and you can say fancy words and it'll be like, right, I've got my point across, they understand what's going on. But when you've got students that are challenging you and asking more and wanting a deeper understanding, obviously brings this new challenge that you need to understand it a lot more, because if you don't understand it, then obviously it's not going to get put across.
And I think a little bit, Brad, also pitching it right. So you've almost forgotten what you've forgotten to get to that kind of level of, let's call it, expertise. And from a student perspective, you need to work out what students actually need to know and what they can then go on and apply. And that's quite often very, very different. And we've made clinical decisions as clinicians that you guys need to make by yourselves with the right information. So pairing it right back is really tricky. And it feels difficult giving you the building blocks sometimes for you to go and make your own mistakes. Mistakes not in terms of patient safety. And we want to tell you the answers. We want to give you our kind of wealth of knowledge that we've got when we're coming out of practice. And that's not always at the right level for me.
Yeah, and then I just wanted to kind of jump back where you mentioned about innovative ideas. Do you feel that you both managed to get all of your innovative ideas out into practice when you're in your lecturing roles, or do you feel like you've still got a lot more to give, but obviously in this new platform of Neonic, which is your training solutions company?
I think there's always innovation, and you can be innovative in whatever you're doing, wherever you're doing it. And I think it's really exciting to kind of empower the new generation to go out there and make change. And I think when we were at the sport program, not everybody was on board with it, I think it's fair to say. And I think it's really exciting to see that you guys are going to be part of the changing face of the profession. So, you know, last year's graduates, you guys coming through, you're looking at things slightly differently, you're challenging things, you're going to go out there and kind of make a change and be part of that new face of physio, which I think is evolving definitely all the time. And I think us being innovative in how we train or teach or do those things, hopefully we'll filter on and kind of move into the profession and allow the next generation to make change. So I don't think we're done making change, but I think facilitating others to help make change is really exciting.
Yeah, and I think to answer your question, Conor, no, we've definitely not always been able to put things into practice that we've perhaps thought about, wanted to. Sometimes practice isn't ready for it. Yeah. If we're honest, we've been part of a team, so obviously you've got to take other people with you if you're kind of going to take them on that kind of type of journey. But for me, fundamentally, if we do what we've always done, we're going to get what we've always got, and the practice is changing and the roles are changing. So I think we have been innovative and let other people perhaps be the judge of that to a certain extent. But yeah, there's definitely been compromise along the way. There's definitely been some challenges, and we've definitely done things that would appear to be the right things to do strategically, but people haven't necessarily been ready for. We've got to equip students for, you know, for the environments that they're going out into now, not necessarily what they're going to look like in a year or two. And things change quite quickly.
Do you think it's been more of a challenge for you as lecturers, almost building this more innovative student because they're going to ask more questions, because they're going to challenge what you're teaching the way that you want them to? Almost, you said that you want them to learn by themselves, you want them to make these mistakes. Do you think that's been harder for you as lecturers because almost you've got to be a step above that?
I think it has to a certain extent, and I think in part because students see that our clinical colleagues as the people doing the job sometimes. And so it doesn't matter what we say from a uni perspective, even though we've got the NHS strategies, we've got HCPC, Chartered Society of Physio, we've got things that we have to include in the physio program, but quite often our students will come back and say, it didn't happen like that, Michael, or we didn't necessarily. So I think sometimes credibility is difficult from a lecturing point of view, sometimes. And I think the uni at Bradford have worked really hard in terms of trying to maintain credibility through its own clinic and lecturer practitioners, so that we look like we can walk the walk as well as kind of talk the talk. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying by harder is that you're suggesting that we'll have to do more work because people are going to challenge us. And for me, yes, harder in terms of perhaps more work and going away, but I'd much rather that. I'd much rather someone challenge me. I'd much rather have an enriched discussion and kind of go away and read and come back and maybe agree to disagree. That's absolutely fine. But I would much rather that than stand in front of a group of people and kind of, you know, deliver a lecture of this is what I think. And, you know, there's only one way to do it and there's only my way to do it. I'd much rather like people take what I've said, apply it in their own way, you know, challenge me, ask me questions, let's have a discussion. It's much, much more exciting job to do if people are challenging and innovating than if they're, you know, going, yes, I agree, that's exactly what I'm going to go out and do and just be a mini me type thing. That's really boring and probably not the best way forward.
And I think COVID's changed things again. You're much more likely, as you guys know, much more likely to get some upfront information now and hopefully, you know, work with university staff to make more sense of it. That's always happened, but there has been quite a lot of knowledge transfer in terms of kind of lectures and those. So again, I think things are constantly evolving and there's definitely been quite a big change in terms of how information's, you know, delivered. Much more perhaps of a slightly more facilitation role. And I think definitely I saw my role change in terms of experience from a lecturer to becoming more of a facilitator of knowledge rather than necessarily always, you know, giving you the knowledge. There's lots of resources out there that you can access. There's more resources than I can keep up to date with, you know, necessarily from that point of view. So yeah, much more likely to feel hopefully a bit more like a peer-to-peer conversation and that kind of clinical reasoning aspect of what we do.
Yeah, I think from a student perspective, it can definitely feel like a minefield sometimes with the amount of information that's out there, trying to kind of learn and know everything, and it's just not possible with the amount of things that are out there. I think it's fair to say that you guys have definitely inspired me to consider the role of a lecturer. But I wanted to know, for any students that are also in that same boat that might be thinking further along the line of going into lecturing, what advice would you give to people listening if they'd like to follow in your footsteps and become a lecturer? What particular things would you tell them to bear in mind?
I think take every opportunity they can to teach, and I think understand the broad heading of teaching. It doesn't have to be standing in front of a classroom. I think taking students, So taking the opportunity to have students with them in whatever workplace they end up in is a really good start, thinking about how they're putting things across, how they're communicating, how they're supporting, thinking about different learner support plans for different students, thinking about different needs. I think that starts you thinking along those kind of lines. Michael mentioned in service earlier, I think taking opportunity to do in service kind of training with your colleagues, with students that you take, and seeing whether it's something you enjoy. I think it's really important that it is something that you enjoy, because hopefully you've gone into physio because you enjoy it. And if you're thinking about going into lecturing, you want to dip your toe in the water and see whether that's something that you actually get a kick out of. So I think going into small amounts of teaching, so students in service, things like that, and then maybe developing a relationship with local universities or HE, FE colleges who are doing kind of similar topic areas, and going in and doing some guest lectures, kind of one-offs initially, maybe not even paid, maybe on a voluntary basis, just to see whether standing in front of a group of people is also something you're comfortable with, because that's not what teaching's all about, but you have got to be comfortable in that situation. And if you still want to do it, but that fills you with dread, what can you do to kind of help that? So are you going to put yourself in that situation a little bit more and try and get used to it? Is there any things that you can do, strategies that you can employ to kind of improve your abilities in those areas, or reduce your fears, I suppose, if that's something? There probably isn't a path for everybody, but they're the type of things that I think...
I'd agree with Claire. I think if you're somebody that sees students as colleagues out on placement, as opposed to that standing in good stead in terms of thinking about being, you know, if you feel that you're student-centred, that's going to be a really good kind of start. I probably suggest that people, if they're really serious about it, start to kind of think a little bit more strategically in terms of the strategies. So start to follow people like Health Education England, you know, the CSP, see what's kind of on the agenda, I suppose, from a physio perspective in terms of knowledge. Teaching definitely, experience for teaching definitely takes many forms, and most people have experienced things that will contribute, but they don't always see the link. And it's quite an eclectic mix of a role, which is one of the things I kind of love about it, in terms of it's a real mixture. The teaching is probably the obvious bit in terms of giving the examples, but definitely a bit of homework into some of the other sides of that academic role. Some of the university stuff, you know, it's not the be all and end all, but league tables, quality assurance, there's a lot of information out there that and it might be for some people that they maintain a clinical role and coming to do some teaching sessions might be their absolute ideal, rather than fully immersing themselves in a lecturing role.
And I think the other sort of aspect that's important to maybe highlight is the kind of continued education and research bit. So if you're going to go into a lecturing role, if you've decided teaching is something you enjoy and it's for you, if you haven't got a master's, is it worth thinking about? Is there a master's that you're interested in doing? Because you're going to be much more likely to be successful if you've got a master's or potentially a PhD. And definitely lecturing jobs are going much more towards requiring a PhD. And in some areas, sports science, for example, you probably won't get a lecturing job without having a PhD. In physio and professions where you've had usually a career beforehand, there's a bit more latitude, but it's definitely moving more towards that. So it might be, as well as that teaching aspect, thinking about your education and your research and what your interests around that, and maybe trying to do some stuff like that as part of your current role to see whether that stuff's part of what you enjoy as well.
Yeah, agreed. There's definitely expectations from a lecturing perspective. And if opportunities arise in current roles to get master's modules and to do, that will definitely stand people in really good stead.
I think that's more than I've ever learned about lecturing and what it almost feels like to be a lecturer. One thing I did want to ask was, you talked a lot about the transferability between lecturing and being a clinician. How would you say lecturing compares to being a clinician, like workload, difficulty, responsibility, job satisfaction, that sort of?
Yeah, I think they're really difficult to compare, because I came out of practice feeling pretty burnt out into lecturing, but now kind of wondered why in terms of from that perspective. They're definitely both have the potential to be quite stressful. They're very, very, they're busy, absolutely, from that perspective. I wouldn't want to do anybody a disservice in terms of they're individual and you're individuals within your roles. I'm much more comfortable in a lecturing role in terms of managing that workload than I was when I came out of a really busy outpatient team at that moment in time. The definite similarities, yeah, really difficult to compare, because I think it's individuals in those circumstances that probably dictate what those roles feel like.
Yeah, I'd agree. Workload wise, I think if you're working hard at your job, any job could be a big workload. And then if you're motivated and want to kind of continue to strive to improve and challenge yourself, you're always going to be busy potentially. There's similarities in terms of, for me, from sport point of view, there was peaks and troughs in terms of in-season, off-season, that type of a thing. And lecturing probably has similar things in terms of term time versus non-term time and the different things. I think there's a perspective we do nothing in the holidays and kind of sit around and have coffee, which isn't true, I promise. But it's what you do at those different times. So I think there was probably some similarities in terms of ups and downs, whereas if someone's more in a different role in physio, they might be doing much more steady, and it's not less work, but doing similar things on a day-to-day basis rather than having those kind of in and off season kind of fluctuations. I suppose I agree with Michael, it's hard to compare. I think in both, you're trying to facilitate people to achieve their potential, but in really different ways. So from a patient, you're trying to improve kind of quality of life, you're trying to deal with whatever they've kind of come to you with. Student-wise, you're still trying to get them to achieve their potential, but in a really different way. And I love them both. I think I love a challenge, I love a problem to solve, and I think there's challenges and problems to solve in both. I think communication is key for both, but like we said earlier, communicating in a really different way to suit different people and learning styles versus communicating with a patient, really quite different. So yeah, I suppose I agree really. I hope that sort of answers.
And I think for me, I can talk about me a little bit more. I was really fortunate in my clinical role that I got the opportunity to get involved in projects, and I had a voice that was heard and could influence things. But my lecturing job was always much more varied than my clinical job, and I love that in terms of obviously the teaching role, but even that varies in terms of those different, but the amount of things that I could get involved with as a university in terms of building projects, estates, health and wellbeing initiatives, you know, to name but a few, you know, writing new programs, postgrad, undergrad, there was much more variety for me, and that was very definitely something. And I know there's some really varied clinical jobs, so I'm not, but for me that was a big difference that I really kind of welcomed.
I suppose it's quite a difficult question to answer really, isn't it? And the amount of jobs that are out there and the amount of different lecturing roles are out there it's always going to be difficult to answer that question. But I think you've done really well.
I think to not think that people are coming out of a busy clinical environment into something that's term time and that looks a cushy number. I'm not saying there are people like that, but it very definitely is. There's different, very different pressures, but perhaps a little bit more varied.
Kind of just going back to when you started talking about your answer to the advice question. You kind of mentioned about lead tables and things like that. And I just kind of wanted to ask, do you feel that these ways of measuring university success and performance are accurate, or are they very much, in your opinion, from being a lecturer but also working outside of university, are they things to take with a pinch of salt?
I think a bit of both. I think they're useful and they give some information. So I think for students looking at universities, if you look at the league tables and look how they're broken down, the individual components of wherever they sit in that league table are probably interesting in terms of, you know, staff-student ratios, research output, things like that. I think the way that they are calculated and put together sometimes, and the weighting that's put on different things, I think it depends on who you are and what importance you place on different things as to kind of where you would then put people. So I think there probably isn't a perfect way to measure it. And I think it's one of those things that actually, if someone said to me, well, how would you do it? I probably can't come up with anything massively better. I might have different priorities to someone else in terms of how I might rank things. So I think I understand there has to be something, and I'm not saying what there is broken, but I don't think what there is works for everybody. And I think suggesting that this university is top because of these things, if someone has different priorities, it's not going to be top for them. So I think it can be a useful tool for students looking at universities, but I think if they take that in isolation, I think is dangerous. And I think if you're a student who wants to go to a particular type of university because you feel more comfortable in, say, smaller class sizes, or you want to be in a big city or something like that, your experience matters outside of just where the university sits in its rankings. And I think you've got to be happy somewhere to do well. So I think visiting a university, seeing if you like the facility, seeing if you like the kind of staff and the vibe you get from the students can be as important as rankings. So I think they have their place. I don't think that they're the be all and end all.
No, I mean, we benefited as a university in terms of those physio league tables. I completely agree, but they were massively important because we know that, and again, some of our kind of overseas students would very definitely look in terms of their investment in terms of coming to the UK. So yeah, didn't always like them. We seemed as a university to get around physio and health, perhaps more generally, we seemed to get quite a lot of the things right. So you can clearly influence things. But yeah, in terms of the makeup of those, yeah, not perfect. You guys from a consumer, you know, student perspective in terms of, you probably need an indication where somebody is performing from a program perspective. It doesn't matter from a physio point of view. Your degree is your most important thing in terms of, you know, getting to where you need to be. But yeah, you're there for a reasonable amount of time and invest quite a lot of time and expense in terms of being there. So yeah, not an exact science, definitely not. But I think they're important to the university. That's clear.
Yeah, I think like you've said, definitely useful as a tool, but speaking from personal experience, there's nothing like going to university and meeting the team and meeting the environment and getting sort of the feel of the places. Gives you a lot more than you can know than the numbers and the tables.
Yeah, and I think that's what Bradford benefits from. That actually we didn't work too hard for league table positions. They happened as a consequence of what we did, and they're still doing as a program from that point of view. So, because you can't influence a lot of things with the best will in the world. So, and if you do go and get that feel, you're likely to be satisfied. League tables, hopefully, you know, start to take care of themselves.
Yeah, and perhaps that's key, that to not work towards the league tables, to actually work towards the innovation and the team feel, and then naturally those rewards will come with the league tables. Just moving on to the next part. So we've spoken in the past about how universities are having difficulties with providing or offering bespoke placements. With your background of academia and understanding the difficulties of this, what does this new business that you've set up help to offer?
Okay, so we know that healthcare placements generally, not just physio, are limited at the minute in part by the number of placements that can be provided. So there's a balance between universities as businesses wanting students, the needs of the NHS, but also increasingly not just the NHS. If we're looking at things like first contract roles, private kind of enterprise, private physios are increasingly fulfilling NHS roles. So, which again is one of the reasons why courses need to think a little bit differently about where we kind of find ourselves. One of the things that limited growth in Bradford at times over the years was the number of placements that kind of be offered. And it's a national issue. It's not just a local issue. It's a national issue. So if there are more placements, inevitably there are likely to be in the short term more training places offered. So that's the obvious link in terms of, and we as a provider can provide placement capacity that helps across the kind of wider region. There's then a conversation perhaps about the type of experience that people get on a program. And again, that's really difficult to, and it comes back to my original point that, you know, if we do what we've always done, we get what we've always kind of got. And there's a lot of conversations nationally around, there's increasing capacity, I think that's fair to say, but the types of placement that students and possibly universities are looking for is probably the next issue for physio in terms of what a physio profile looks like, a physio student placement profile looks like. And again, I think we'd recognise that there's a little bit of a disconnect sometimes between what perhaps Health Education England, the NHS, would require, and real experience of students going for interview in terms of what some employers will ask for in terms of managing that. And you guys will have been, you know, involved in peer discussions, I'm almost certain, in terms of, you know, what sort of placements you want, what sort of placements. And in the past, we've perhaps been able to be a little bit more bespoke in terms of taking students' wishes. We don't want to place students in environments they don't want to go, but you might need to go from a profession perspective. So we've hopefully got an innovative model that builds on our skills in terms of being flexible and being able to change things that we can morph as a company and an entity to provide the sort of placements that people need and that the NHS wants. And that's likely to be a little bit different to practice.
Yeah, I think practice have struggled sometimes to increase placement capacity, quite rightly, because they're busy. You know, I mean, if we think about what the NHS is going through right now, you know, people are at capacity, they're stressed, they're stretched. And I think then to add students into the mix, depending on how you view that, is almost adding something else into the workload. And I think what we've done is almost sort of turn that on its head. So actually the workload is the students and having the students, and that it's not that we're doing a job and we've got students on top. It's that actually the students and that education and that development of skills, et cetera, is going to be the workload. So that allows us to turn supervision models on their head as well and have more students and less educators, because we're focused on the students and their development rather than trying to run our own caseload and have students and try and supervise them with their caseloads. And I think that allows us to do things differently. I think it allows it to potentially be more teaching focused environment. And that isn't a slight on any educators out there. They might be brilliant teachers, but they're splitting their time between trying to teach and educate students and doing their current role. Whereas hopefully we'll have more time to dedicate to students, potentially be a bit more bespoke in identifying their needs and offering stuff, as opposed to trying to run a busy service and not necessarily being able to have the time to do that. So I think although we will have a type of placement, so a primary care placement, I think within that we'll probably have more time to offer some bespoke sessions, training, identification of needs, things like that. And because of the way our model works and the fact that we're going to be teachers and educators rather than physios who are having students.
Yeah, I think just like you said then, physio student placements traditionally within a physio team with other physio students. But I think one of my favourite things about Neonic is the mixed MDT approach that you guys adopted. So this presents opportunity for collaborative work between students of different professions, ranging from medics, nurses, midwives, OTs, and of course physios. Really cements that MDT approach very early on from being a student that you really don't get anywhere else. What originally gave you this idea to do this, and how do you think it's going to benefit students that come on placement with you?
Yeah, so I think when we've had this idea for a number of years in terms of doing something a little bit different that kind of ties our skills together. And we were probably thinking, when we started this journey, the thoughts around this journey, we were probably thinking a little bit more physio. That's kind of our skill set. In part, the NHS agenda's driven it to a certain extent, because there's placement shortages. And if we can place more than one student within a particular area and they're been supervised, then that starts to help. People are looking from an MDT working perspective. They're going to be working MDT teams. We're seeing different healthcare professionals manage other healthcare professionals out in practice. So at the minute, the placement model, some of the placement models, there's a lot of innovation, and there's a lot of innovation that's happened quite quickly. Again, doesn't almost prepare students. It becomes quite profession-centric. It becomes potentially quite elitist in terms of, you know, working from that perspective. So Health Education England and the NHS have really driven, and practice increasingly looking at different ways to do it. There are some supervision issues with some of the professional bodies, and there are some customer practice issues that some people would consider that certain professions need to supervise their own professions, and they need that grounding in there. So politically and strategically, there are it's not necessarily straightforward, but we're navigating that with a lot of other people in terms of trying to find a supervision model that works. I think I think it's really valuable, and it replicates practice. So that's fundamental, is where we're at.
Yeah, we've both got experience of setting clinics up at different universities, and with Jamie recently at Bradford doing OT placements alongside physio placements, we've kind of learnt from that and how things like that can work from a multi-profession kind of approach from a student perspective, which, like I say, is quite different. I think having students of different programmes in the same kind of placement, working together, potentially referring between each other, but also recognizing the skills that they need to share. So those transferable skills around making every contact count, so making sure that they're considering well-being of patients and thinking about those things, thinking about communication, thinking about how they've been effective, but also articulating what they do and how that's different to other students. And even in just social conversations, like sat in there in this kind of student space here and chatting about what they do as professions, hopefully that will allow them to go out and have a much better appreciation of what other professions do, how they can work alongside them, maybe be innovative in how they can use different professions in different kind of areas of practice. So we hope that it will sort of stimulate discussion and allow people to think differently maybe when they go out into practice about how they can work with other professions.
There's some concerns that it dilutes the NHS is perhaps pushing for, and I use it in its broadest sense, that pushing for a generic kind of therapist. That's not necessarily our experience. I think there's certain things that do overlap, but then the specialties come into their own. But we're able to talk about that. We're able to talk about what, you know, if a pharmacy student starts doing a health wellbeing check, that you know, community pharmacists are out there, they're offering health advice, but let's tell them what physios do. Let's tell them where they're, what basic assessment skills they can do safely, but when do they need to speak to us as a professional group? You know, similar from an OT perspective, we might be able to take some initial information, but in terms of the recognising the differences between the professions, at some stage, their patients need to see specialist OTs or need to see OTs. So, you know, I think it benefits the professions, and far from going down a generic therapist route, we're actually strengthening and articulating what we're good at in terms of our roles and exploring that. And that for me has been missing in interprofessional education. For, you know, interprofessional education has risked been about teaching generic skills to lots of different students. And I think there's a real opportunity to explore and have conversations about what you do as students, you know, and articulate what you're doing on your courses. Where the professions are heading, where there is similarity, you know, where there isn't. So it's really exciting.
I think we often talk about MDT and working in MDT, but kind of don't really know each profession and what each profession is good at in detail from the very start, like you've mentioned. And there's definitely a lot of extra skills to pick up and share between the students, between professions, because there's always naturally going to be transfer that's going to be useful that they might have perhaps not have thought of from that perspective. And just linking that to placement, in your experience as a lecturer, you've worked with the clinical partners who mark the students' placements. In your time as a lecturer, what things have you picked up that could perhaps be improved through this process? And what will you personally implement as off the back of seeing perhaps some potential improvements?
Yeah, I think we definitely can't tar everybody with the same brush. So this isn't aimed at anybody, I guess. And there's definitely huge amounts of good practice out there, I suppose, like, let's say that. I think, and I might be wrong, you guys are students, so you know better, but from my understanding, I think the two things that sort of students talk about are probably being judged as a new band 5. So almost been judged as what the finished product should be like rather than where they're at on their course. So not having maybe a full appreciation of you're a second year and you've been judged against second year learning outcomes rather than being judged against what your newly qualified band 5 would be expected to do. And I think there's also a perception sometimes that this is an educator that don't give firsts, and kind of going in with that kind of thinking that, well, I'm not going to get a first, or they're not going to give me that grade no matter how well I do. And I think that can be quite demotivating potentially. And I think from our perspective, I think we'll use the backgrounds that we've got to try and be as fair, equitable as we can. And I think we have strengths in kind of marking and feedback and developing action plans that we've got from our previous roles. So not just learning from maybe mistakes of others, but learning from our kind of education background, education roles, and having a set of learning outcomes and criteria that we're kind of working with someone to try and meet and judge them against. Sounds much, much more harsh, but to kind of marry up and make sure that what we're giving them as a grade or in their feedback relates directly to those. So these are the things that you're hoping to achieve or that you want to achieve, and this is where you're at, and making sure that they fit together. So there isn't that disconnect between I've told you that you're doing really well all week, but you're not getting the mark that you feel you want. And actually, you're doing really well, but these are the things you can improve, and making sure that there's clear feedback, there's clear action plans, that people can raise things with you, I suppose. That approachability of an educator is really important, I think. And if you're worried or concerned about anything, or you think that there's something unjust going on, that it can be raised appropriately. There's ways to do things, I guess, but making sure that you're approachable enough to have those potentially difficult conversations, I think, and not being someone who's closed down and just an authoritative kind of figure, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Claire said. I think communication for me is key, and I think students need to play their part in that communication. They can't wait till midway off, or, you know, they need to be mindful that they're not hassling somebody in terms of the busy role. But if the communication's good on placement, even if it's difficult from a placement perspective, for me, there shouldn't really be too many surprises at midway. There might not be agreements, but there should be really clear examples, perhaps, in terms of where kind of, you know, somebody isn't, somebody sits. And we've got that background. And again, because we're focusing on students as our primary kind of role, then feedback will be built in. We won't always agree with our students, but hopefully they'll feel heard and action plans will be written. Opportunity to explore, you know, students in terms of their... Students put quite a lot of pressures on themselves, and therefore, intentionally or otherwise, can put pressure on their educators. So some of the behaviour that we see, some of the has been driven by students' behaviour in terms of almost expressing expectations on a placement that they've never been on before, that they've never experienced before, you know... been very mark focused in terms of their degree classification, and, you know, saying that out loud in the first few days probably isn't great for relationships, and usually takes care of itself if you know the placement experience is good and concentrate on what they're up to.
Yeah, I think there's been quite a lot of very big points there raised. So like the band 5 one, for example, I've had kind of both ways of this. Obviously, being judged at what a band 5 should do isn't really fair as a student, but also on the back of that, when you're told on placement that actually you're doing as good as our band 5s, that is massively ego boosting, and it's almost like, actually I can do this. That's almost like gives you that bit of a wind in your sail to almost know that you are doing the right thing. So I can see the flip side of it, but also it can be very beneficial. And I also get
it quite well, Brad, because I think this conversation is so polarized, because for every negative you have, you'll have a super positive in terms of that approach. And for every negative placement experience, you'll have a super positive experience on the same placement, likely, in terms of the dynamic that goes together for that.
Yeah, I think it's not always a one size fits all, and it's obviously going to be need different approaches, and different students are going to get on with different educators. And I think it's more about us and how we can learn to work well with everybody. That is what we need to work with. Obviously, that continuous open communication that you spoke of. So you guys have got quite a lot of different perspectives as we spoke. So obviously working in the university, being the like placement supervisor, and then obviously you've been a clinical educator before and you're going to be one now. How do you feel students can be more innovative on placements in order to get the maximum out of their placement experience?
So I think there's probably a degree of weighing up the placement area, and that's really tricky, because some placement areas, in the nicest possible way, possibly won't be able to handle innovation, perhaps, in terms of going in and wanting to change things, because from a service perspective, and we've talked about the kind of pressures from there. So I definitely think that there's something in terms of weighing up the situation, but I would definitely advocate that students are proactive, and that innovation might not be hugely innovative for you. It might be making sure that you're available to answer a phone. You know, it might be, you know, offering to do things that you've seen somebody else do that you can free up. Other environments, you might be able to suggest projects. It really, really is varied. But definitely trying to be a little bit selfless in terms of doing it. And again, with the right motives, like if students are listening to this and they're going thinking, right, I need to suggest an improvement because it's going to improve my mark, that's not going to necessarily wash. But I think it's relationships, it's communications, but it's definitely trying to get past your assessment process and your marks in terms of thinking about what you could students don't realise, but they're in a unique circumstance, most students, when they've been on multiple placements. They've been to different areas to see how different things are done. And quite often, those staff are in the same organisation or even the same placement site. So you see things. I don't think students always recognise that they see innovation because it feels normal for them on their placement. But yeah, to share and to engage in those discussions might lead to some innovative opportunities.
Yeah, I think there's probably ways of doing things differently that might not seem innovative. I think don't look at what you're not going to get out of a placement. If you're disappointed with your allocation, look at what you can get out of it. Look at the transferable skills that you're going to get. Maybe move away from that traditional, I want to get these three placements, and look at actually the profession's changing. There's so many different placement models out there now. There's so many different placement opportunities, and always look at the positive, I suppose, if we're thinking about flip side. It's not why am I disappointed and what am I not going to get, but what am I going to get? What can I get? What opportunities are there going to be? And I think going with an open mind, don't risk avoid answering questions, offer stuff. Someone would much rather you offer stuff, get it wrong, have a discussion on why that might not be the case and kind of get it right together than someone sit in silence and not want to answer your questions. And I think it sits with proactivity, but I think students think proactivity has to be them kind of, you know, taking the lead and doing something. Sometimes proactivity is about going away and reading something that you've heard people talking about in the staff room and kind of trying to be part of conversations and offering something rather than being scared of offering your opinion because my opinion doesn't count because I'm a student. That's definitely not the case. And I think Michael said, you're probably more innovative than you think because you've seen a variety of different placement sites potentially. But I do think the marks focused thing is probably not the best. I think opportunity focused and try and figure out what are the opportunities here and what can I get out of it. I think as well for me, making sure that you have an idea around your well-being and your resilience. You're never going to do well on a placement unless you have strategies that ensure that you're well. And if you're well and you're kind of feeling good about yourselves, you're going to be able to engage better, you're going to feel better about your experience, you're maybe going to have a bit more confidence. And I think not underestimating that wellness and that understanding strategies for you personally to be more resilient is probably a key to doing well in placement environments.
Yeah, I'd just throw another kind of word, employability. If you can try and view things from what would make you employable, and sometimes that is overcoming adversity. Sometimes that's dealing with issues on placement. Sometimes students with a perfect placement profile that's had a really good run of placements sometimes struggle at interview because they're going to be asked questions about, have they had any conflict? Have they, you know, come across something that they've had to overcome? So I'm not saying you go looking for it, but actually in terms of sometimes those difficult placement experiences that you never want to go through again are the things that students talk about. But actually as a manager interviewing, think, do you know what? They can fit in my less than perfect organisation because they've shown that they've been able to overcome certain situations. So yeah, roll with it for me and make the best of this any situations. But sometimes what feels really hard and negative at the time will be the thing that defines students and the things that they go back to demonstrate that they're employable.
Wow, I think that was really, you showing every student how to get the best grade and how to become such a better physiotherapist there. That was amazing. Thanks, guys. So we're going to move on to the three questions we ask all of our guests. So Claire, we'll come to you first. What would you say the three most important behaviours or traits for a physiotherapist are in your experience and why?
Okay, I think being sort of motivated and having that desire to continually improve and kind of want to move forward and kind of challenge yourself and be the best you can be is really important. So that kind of motivation around your role, your profession, whatever part of that profession you are. So whether you're a lecturer, whether you're you know, working with paediatrics through to working with the elderly, whatever it is that you're kind of motivated and you want to be the best you can be. I think understanding our patients is probably really important. And I think it's key to look at yourself first. So if somebody's not doing what you think that you've asked them to do or what you believe you've shown them to do or told them to do, why aren't they doing that? And I think there's an easy out to blame somebody. And I don't think anybody's not doing it on purpose or to get at you. So why is it? What have you asked them to do? How have you asked them to do it? Have you asked them to do something that doesn't fit in with them, their lifestyle? Is there a good reason that they haven't understood what you've asked them to do? And I think that understanding patience, looking at yourself first rather than going to blame the person that isn't doing it, is probably a good thing. And I think resilience, it's a word that's batted around a lot at the moment, and it probably is overused, but I think not everything is going to go perfect all the time. Not everything is going to look how you want it to look all the time. And you're not always going to do as well as you want all the time. And I think how you respond to that, how you grow from that, how you come back from that, I suppose, is key, really, and what you learn from it, how you move forward. So I think resilience, although it's a bit cliche, is probably a big one.
I think that was one of the most different and most thought out answers. Very different themes to what we've had before, but also very innovative again. And really shows forward thinking. So not much to follow on from there, Michael, but good luck.
Well, you've just stolen one of mine, because my first one was to be innovative. And I think as students, and we're undergoing a massive amount of change as a profession, and increasingly tight deadlines, transformation of practice, different roles. You don't need to be kind of going out and, you know, offering something radically different, but we need to be thinking solutions. We're problem solvers as physios, more perhaps around kind of patients and helping those, but I think we definitely need to be innovative. We need to be adaptable. We've all had to be adaptable. But I think as a profession, we definitely need to be adaptable. And I know that you've spoken to quite a lot of guests on your podcast that have morphed what they've done over there, either the years or the more recent history, in terms of actually, you know, doing and changing things. Yourselves included, you've been super adaptable in terms of what you're doing. And again, applicable across professions. My last one's to be proactive. So students will definitely resonate with students on placement. And again, it's not necessarily beating somebody's door down in terms of pushing reflections under the, but we risk sometimes as a profession, quite a small profession perhaps compared to some of our other colleagues, you know, we risk talking about what might have been as opposed to actually pushing ourselves forward. And there's a massive amount of innovation due to people being proactive within the profession at the minute. And therefore, there's an awful lot of opportunity for students to go into different roles. And they've come about for me as a consequence of being innovative, adaptable and proactive in terms of making those changes. You don't have to do what they've always done. Some students, if we're talking about students, going and doing their rotations 100% will be the right thing to do. But for some of you, you'll know that's not what you want to do. And there are an increasing amount of roles out there in terms of for physio students to do what you want to do. Your rotations will still be there if that needs to be there.
Yeah, I think some really, really solid answers to that question. And I think, yeah, if anyone described you as any of those things that you've mentioned there, you'd be a pretty top tier physio, I think, in my opinion. So the second of the three questions was, what excites you the most about the future of physiotherapy? So I don't think you'll have any difficulty in answering this question, guys, but we'll start with you, Michael.
So I think picking up where we're at as a profession, we're really in the forefront in terms of being able to facilitate change, you know, first contact practice. You know, we've been talking about getting physios in GP surgeries for a number of years. You know, we've now, it's happening. It's happening on a large scale. We're increasingly seen as exercise professionals in our own right. We've had a lot of conversations, you know, along the way. I think it's a really, really exciting time to be a physio. For me, there's a lot of change. We've obviously got a lot of personal change, which is hugely exciting in terms of where we're at. A little bit scary, I think that's also worth kind of saying, in terms of where we find ourselves. But yeah, I think it's exciting times if we get things right, and we market ourselves, talk about what we're doing. I think it's a super exciting time to be a physio.
Yeah, I think from a personal, I suppose, selfish perspective, I think the innovations around placement is hugely exciting. And if I'm talking not just profession, but me personally, it's really exciting to be at the table and be part of those discussions. There's so much innovation going on across the trusts, across Health Education England, to try and not just enhance capacity, but to enhance the breadth of experience, enhance the quality of experience. And there's so many more supervision models that have been considered than kind of ever were before. So community placement, mixed placements, hybrid placements, hub and spoke placements. There's just such a variety of different kind of opportunities and more people at the table than have ever wanted to be at the table, I think. So we've probably talked about different things, role emerging placements and things like that for years and wanted to kind of drive things forward, but capacity issues within trusts and busy work for people who are in the trust doing the job away from students anyway. And I think, but now with maybe government drives for more students, with maybe Health Education coming to the table and definitely providing some funding and support for different new and innovative ideas, I think, yeah, for me personally, the change in face of what a placement might look like and how students are going to be able to interact with placements. And I suppose like placements reflect hopefully a changing and different and modifying profession. So there's loads of things to be excited about in physio, and that's definitely not only placements to be excited about, but selfishly from our perspective, I think that's probably exciting for us.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of change going on now, and I think progress is only going to be made when you're out of your comfort zone. So like Michael, like you said, feeling nervous, I think that's totally acceptable, and I think it's almost granted, you'd want to feel nervous going into something that you've never done before and something that's brand new and something that is almost going to be career changing, profession changing.
Yeah, I think that's really sound advice for your fellow students, Brad, because you're right, but sometimes at the minute that goes perhaps a step further than it needs to in terms of people feeling. You're right, it needs to be there to drive people on, absolutely.
Brilliant. So we'll move on to the final question. There's no specific way to answer this, but we'll start with you, Claire. Are you satisfied?
I think that this is a real dichotomy. I think the obvious answer is no, because you want to drive forward, you want new challenges, you want to kind of excel in new areas. And I think if you're satisfied, you probably don't want to do those things necessarily, and you're happy with your lot. So I think possibly my go-to might be no, but I think if you're always looking forward, you don't appreciate the present. And I think there has to be some element of appreciating the present. And if we always look forward, we're never going to do that. So I think no is probably my first answer, but I think I'll caveat it with, if I'm going to try and appreciate the present, I'm really proud of what we've done recently and what we've achieved over the last couple of months. And I'm excited for what it will lead to, I suppose. So no and yes, probably in the same response, if I'm going to try and appreciate the now.
Definitely enjoy the journey while you're on it.
Yeah.
And Michael, are you satisfied?
Yeah, and probably thinking more in the moment. Yeah, definitely. I mean, look around in terms of what we've achieved in a very short period of time. This was an initial conversation for us in March, and we're a little bit later than we'd hoped to be in terms of, but yeah, not totally. As Claire said, we can't be satisfied as where we sit now, because there's a journey to embark on. But yeah, absolutely. No regrets in terms of my kind of journey to this point. Absolutely.
Brilliant.
So I just wanted to say on behalf of all of us, thank you very much for joining us for this episode. It's been great to have you on and fascinating to listen to the both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's been, yeah, really good.
So that's it for episode 17 of the podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening, and please send us any feedback you have to our Instagram page. And as always, don't forget to follow us on Spotify by typing in the Student Physio Podcast, and follow our Instagram and Twitter @PhysioPodcast1. Thank you very much for listening, and bye for now.